thing. So let me start at the first level, the expert state. This is pretty much where everybody in this room is. Everybody is a visual expert in reading English in this room, I think. And this ability depends on a very particular circuit in the brain that we've been able to map out, we've been able to study. And even more importantly, it's built on, that circuit's built on some circuitry that we all had when we were 4 and 5 years of age. This is a lateral view of the human brain, and we've kind of inflated it using computer graphics in order to look at the entire surface of the human brain. And we're plotting out in blue regions of the brain that are heavily responsive to spoken language. If somebody's just lying in the scanner and you're playing them samples of spoken language, these areas of the brain that are just up and behind your left ear are highly responsive to processing the information in auditory language. These areas in red are highly responsive to processing the information in visual letters. So if you're just looking at the letters of a word, these areas of the brain are highly responsive. I don't know if you can see this cursor. Can you see it when I move it like that? Okay. These areas in the back of the brain, in the visual system, are highly responsive to the letters. These areas in this blue region are highly responsive to auditory words. And this is basically the organization that you have after 36 months of age. There's very clear differentiation of these circuits. But what happens when you go through school and you learn to read is that these circuits learn to talk to each other in a brand new way. There's a plastic reorganization of the entire system driven by education, driven by your experiences, looking at letters and activating language. And we can map out this circuit, and we can see how this massive reorganization takes place as kids go through first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade. And even more importantly, we can map out how do individual brains differ in terms of pulling off this big reorganization that education requires of all of us. And as an aside, education didn't really require this of all of us until very recently. It wasn't until the printing press that we're in this bizarre situation where the entire population is expected to learn to read. And when there's a small subset of the population that can't do this very well, they're considered in some sort of pathological range. We're able to look at these individual differences by imaging adults who've had lifelong difficulties in learning to read. These are not difficulties associated with intelligence, associated with the drive to learn, associated with even the desire to learn to read. These are difficulties that are very specific to this one challenge of reorganizing your visual system to interface with your language system. And when we look at, there have been dozens of studies looking at the difference between dyslexic adults and non-dyslexic adults that are roughly equal in intelligence and opportunity and drive. When you average all of these studies together, there's a couple of brain regions that pop out as being really critically involved. One is this region back near the visual system that I call the visual word form area. And another is this region. It's hard to point at all three screens at once, but can you see this little mouse moving? Okay. This region is in the language cortex, associated with processing the sounds of language. These regions are not as responsive in an fMRI scan when a dyslexic is trying to do a simple word reading task. For controls, for most people in this room who are skilled readers, these regions become really specifically active when we're reading versus when we're doing most anything else you can do with your brain. For dyslexics, these regions are not very responsive, and we're able to start to dig into this individual difference. So, understanding the hallmarks of reading experts, as a result of all the thousands of hours we all spent in this one activity of reading, of picking up human language through looking at these little visual word forms, we've taken on the hallmarks of experts. And these hallmarks exist across multiple forms of expertise. If any of you become experts in radiology, or experts in recognizing cars, or experts in nearly any field that requires intensive visual analysis, you get these hallmarks of expertise where the meaning of the symbol or the meaning of the stimulus becomes readily apparent. In a quarter of a second or a fifth of a second, you're able to know exactly what stimulus you're looking at. The activation of words, their meanings, and their sounds are completely automatic. If I throw up a word on the screen, you can't help but have the sound of that word sort of active in your mind. And third, there's this process that we call configural processing, where you look at a word as an entire unit, and the entire combination of all these letters kind of combine automatically. We can map out the circuitry of the brain to see exactly where the changes occur. So this is a great question, I think, because it's a general question that you can apply to lots of forms of expertise. And it was raised over here looking at 3 to 5 year old problem solvers. How does the rise of expertise lead to changes in the brain? If you become an expert in something, like if you become an expert in recognizing race cars or shoes or something, you spend thousands of hours looking at objects and being able to categorize them very rapidly. There are changes that occur in our visual system so that when we show you the object of your expertise, a part of your visual system becomes selectively activated. You've rewired the response properties of your visual system through your experiences. So we can look at the rise of these expertise effects and see how does reading change the visual system. And we've been able to map that out in skilled adults. We understand the circuitry of it. But once you become an expert, there's two things that really go on. You are skilled. Your visual system changes the way information flows up from the world. So if I show you the object of your expertise, your visual system already does kind of an automatic analysis of it and kind of tells you the significance of, wow, that's a 1967 X-type Jag. And you just know that instantly. Your visual system has organized that information for you. But there's another thing that goes on, and this is the part that I think is most critically important for the link between education and neuroscience. And that is, you become much better at attending to certain types of information. And that's one of the things that happens when you learn something. You learn what's really critical to attend to. What's going to give me the juice out of this situation and tell me what's going on? So in addition to these bottom-up changes that occur with expertise, where you've got these well-organized circuits that are just sort of automatically process and organize the world for you in really interesting and useful ways, there's this top-down process. And this is the process that's kind of leading the show of becoming an expert at something. There are these top-down processes where you are focusing your attention, not just at the task, but at particular forms of information. And as you focus your mind on this particular form of information, you're leading to changes in your brain. You're leading to changes in your brain activity in the moment, and you're leading to lasting changes in the potential activity in your brain.